This podcast is brought to you by Art Margins, the online journal of East and Central European contemporary art. Download more podcasts and read interviews, articles, and reviews at www.artmargins.com.
Hello, it's Zsuzsa László, and I'm here with Anna Szilahi, a Hungarian artist, to discuss her recent work, Missa Ecologica. It was presented first in the framework of UF Biennial Budapest in the spring of 2021 as a video installation. It was part of the exhibition ACLIM, Agency for Climate Imaginary, created by Extra Realm Artist Group, Anna is a member of. The video shows an out-of-time scene in which 9 female characters appear singing in a forest and embody, with their imaginative, eclectic dress, makeup, movements and voice, natural beings such as bone, reed, clam, swan or echo, singing together as a choir. These characters are taken from a 19th century literary tale, which is a fictional account of the origins of the echo in Tihany at Lake Balaton in Hungary. What I found startling when I saw the exhibition is that I could witness a sovereign beauty that did not intend to appeal to anyone outside of this community. Could you share with us, Anna, how this work emerged and how you found its specific theme and format?
Hi, Zsuzsa, and hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. So, Missa Ecologica started because, as you said, I am a member of the Extra Realm Artist Group, and I was co-curating with them the ACLIM, Agency for Climate Imaginary, exhibition for the UF Biennial in April. But we, Rita Süveges and Gidon Horvat and I, were also involved as participating artists. And it means that we were all supposed to present a research-based artwork dealing with a locally relevant ecological issue. And preparing for this, last summer we were invited by Ferenc Jordan, the then director of the Limnological Institute located in Tihany at Lake Balaton. And there I became interested specifically in the story of the echo of Tihany. So this echo starts actually working when someone shouts out to the Benedictine Abbey from the so-called Echo Hill, and the voice or the echo comes back in like 2 seconds. And in Hungary, it became an important phenomenon for centuries, and poets tend to address it in their poems, and also visitors love it. But it's actually sort of fading, or it's becoming less audible. And I started to research the whys. And I figured that all the theories agree on one factor, namely that the sound environment has changed drastically. So some assume that the influx of tourists causes a background noise that cancels out reverberations, and others assume that it relates to the construction on the hill and the new plants that people have planted, so the natural environment has been cut out and new decorative plants have been planted, so the whole ecological environment changed and therefore the soundscape has changed.
It might be useful to mention that Lake Balaton is the most popular holiday resort area in Hungary.
Yeah, so exactly. Tihany is built on the peninsula of Tihany within the Lake Balaton. So it's actually a fisher village, and it used to be. And also there has been strong changes when in the 20th century the very well-known lavender fields were planted. It changed the environment in a way, but this kind of over-tourism and huge amounts of constructions, I think it started after 2000, but it also mm-hmm. it was strengthened in the 2010s. Mm-hmm. I think.
So it's quite recent.
Yeah, this super visible, like, drastic change is quite recent, mm-hmm. I would say. But the tourism, or this kind of basic noise pollution, which is the result of over-tourism, mm-hmm. has been going on for decades.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you. So this is the theme that we already discussed, but the format of the work is also very interesting because it's composed of these old antiphons. Would you describe this format or the significance it has for you?
Yeah, so as I kind of described already, it's a very complex topic, and I was looking for a format with which I could deal with the complexity of this problem, and I also wanted to incorporate the echo itself into the work, and this is how I found the format or the genre of O antiphons. This is a setting where there's a choir and a soloist, and the choir repeats the soloist. And this is how I thought that I could incorporate these echoing effect. So basically I reversed, and there's the choir who pre-sings the verses, and then the soloist becomes the echo who repeats what has been sung.
So did you first have in mind a choral piece and wrote the text sung by the choir in Latin and Hungarian only subsequently?
So yeah, so the concept was first, and then I contacted Laura Sari, the leader of the Varsányi Sirena Choir, and we started to work together on this piece. And of course, this worked in a way that I wrote the verses first, or the 9 poems. Mm-hmm. And after that, we sat down and we kind of talked about how this could be constructed musically as well. And when the music was composed by Laura, we together figured how we could add my part, or the echoing part, to the already written or composed choir piece. So it was an organically unfolding project in a way, and we already thought at the beginning that we want a video work out of it, because this actually fit better to the Off Biennial exhibition, mm-hmm. as well, especially in times of the corona crisis. It was kind of unimaginable that we go there and sing there together. So mm-hmm. already the video recording and the audio recording required a lot of attention and a lot of extra effort to make this safe for everybody participating. As you already mentioned, it starts from this liturgical musical format, the O antiphon, and it's in Latin, as you said, and musically it's built up in a way that we go through music history in a way, and we end up singing pop song-like melodies.
Ah, so from the beginning of the piece is kind of closer to all the musical formats or musical styles.
Yeah, if so I can say. We start from Gregorian chants. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what inspired us at the beginning and inspired mm-hmm. Laura. And then we go through like folk song like melodies, and then we end up with I think there is also one Tchaikovsky verse, and then we end up with pop songs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was basically Laura's idea.
Yeah, that's very fascinating, even if as a viewer or listener I couldn't describe it in so kind of consequently, but I could sense that there's a mixture of various references in pre-modern and modern art. And you also had a literary text as a source, or used a literary text as a source, that of János Garai's work, which is a sequence of poems on Balaton, and it also tells a tale.
This poem, written by János Garai in the 19th century, is on the echo itself. It's the legend or the myth of the echo, and it's of course partly rooted in Ovid's Metamorphoses, but it's also different from it. According to the poem, there was a girl shepherding a herd of golden wool goats, and she had a very nice singing voice, and the son of the lake's king fell in love with her and healed himself thanks to her singing. But this girl refused his love, and he therefore died in sadness and despair. And as a consequence, the king hexed her to be able to only repeat her surroundings, only other people, but not to express herself. So she basically lost her autonomous voice. And in the 19th century interpretation, it could of course be read as a selfish and cold-hearted girl who deserved what she got, but a contemporary take on this, and of course my personal take on this, is that it's a tale of patriarchal retribution. So there's this chillingly misogynist legend which leads to a woman insisting on her autonomy to lose her voice, and therefore her autonomy, and of course there's this ecological and sonic transformation of the area and the fading echo. So I wanted to reinterpret this complex, both historical and contemporary problem in this utopian way, also on the level of the text, but also with the music and the visual level. And I really have to emphasize that it was in a collaboration with Laura, but also with Gergely Offner, who was the cameraman of the whole video work, and he participated very actively already from the very beginning when we went to look for the scenes and the places where to shoot. And he also took part very actively when we scripted the whole thing. So
first, it would be interesting to learn how the story is changed in your piece, because even if listen to and view the video, I think it's worth summarizing how your new utopian ending is changing the narrative.
I imagined a 9-verse choir piece where each verse is based on a symbol of femininity, but these 8 symbols are also 8 agents of the local ecosystem in Tihanj, such as there's the swine, the golden wood goat, the algae, the reed or the water lily. And these were embodied by one of the singers each. And the 9th verse is about the female voice itself. So at the textual level, I wanted to create a materialist account of this community. The poems reflect on how these plants, animals, and minerals are interconnected with each other, and how they interact with each other at the material level.
Also, there's a repeated wish or exclamation that each element should set herself free. So this is a repeated motif.
Exactly.
Liberating action or liberating wish.
Exactly. It actually comes from the genre of the O antiphones, which are liturgical chants and they are sung during the last week of Advent, right before Christmas, for 7 days. And in all antiphons that are sung, the third line is always addressing Christ to come. So I wanted to use this structure. I think it's very important that these can be also regarded as ecofeminist prayers or hymns. Mm-hmm. So a prayer for the liberation of these minerals and plants and animals, but they are also symbols of femininity. So it's also basically for the liberation of femininity from the oppression of patriarchal oppression.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask, that in this imaginary narrative, what is the force, or what is the condition from which these figures or characters should free themselves? Because it's really utopian in a sense that it's not there, so it's not explicitly described if there's anything wrong around these characters, or it can only be projected, because it's really very harmonic utopian, so there's nothing, no kind of evil force within the work itself or the story or the visuals.
Yeah, when I started to work with the topic of Tihany, firstly I actually wanted to create a documentarist work, but then I got kind of desperate and depressed by this whole topic when I got deeper and deeper in what's going on there. And I realized that maybe it would be a better decision to make something poetic and just to detach from the horrendous things that actually go on there. So I wanted to concentrate on the values or what's actually still there that we can value. And of course, there are a lot of places where reed is eradicated or woods are cut out, but there are still parts that are, I wouldn't say the word untouched, because I don't believe anything is untouched anymore, but like natural habitats that have been mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to concentrate on these plants and minerals and animals, which are still part of the ecosystem of the Lake Balaton, or even more specifically Tihany, for example, the clams, which are also one of the agents. This is why I decided to go into a more utopian mm-hmm. Direction.
So the king and the son of the king is not part of your narrative, so they are, I wouldn't say erased, but they don't get a role.
So it's mm-hmm. I think it's my narrative about this is that the echo who lost her voice reconnects and reacknowledges the agents of nature, and through this connection and through a new sense of community with nature and the agents of nature, and the through this sense of belonging with them, she finds her autonomous voice again.
Mm. And what about the costumes and the makeup? Because I find them fascinating, because they also created this very kind of specific mixture of kind of spectacularity, but also this kind of handmade or do-it-yourself style. So it really helped to set this utopian vision, how the members of the choir were dressed and how they behaved in a bit unworldly fashion. So could you share any insider details about how this whole visuality of the work developed?
So the members of the choir were very excited about this part, about the visual part and mm-hmm. about the dresses. And I also had a certain idea of how I wanted it to be. But actually, with the shops closed and not much opportunities left for like obtaining costumes and dresses, it was really a community effort, which was a disadvantage at the beginning. I think it turned out to be a very strong, committed community effort, and it really helped the case.
I was also interested in the question, if you have any ideas why choirs and musical pieces became so popular in contemporary art, if you have any kind of take on this issue.
I think singing in a choir has a very strong tradition in Hungary, and there is a strong tendency of re-acknowledging the value of these choirs as artistic communities, actually. And another explanation is what you also mentioned, that collaborative art practices are on the rise, and choirs can be regarded as an alternative to the individualist art production. So it can be regarded as a collective art practice in a way.
Yeah, we might mention that there's one tradition which is singing folk songs together, which I think has some connections to workers' movement as well. But this is the other tradition where kind of propaganda, but propaganda songs were sang together, and there were kind of propaganda choirs.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it's all started before the Second World War.
Yes, yes. So, there's this aspect as well. So, as I already mentioned, I came to the art scene from poetry, and I could also mention the strong choral speaking movement within the labor movement before the Second World War. So much that at a point with Laura, we were actually considering to have a choral speaking intro to the video piece, where all symbols would have been pre-introduced through choral speaking.
I don't know if it's connected to the fact that you studied in Paris and Vienna, and one of your first works is Body Free Dance, in which you asked people, it was in Paris, right? People who don't speak Hungarian to read Hungarian poems, right?
Yeah.
And a very interesting interlanguage was created through this experiment. Could you tell a bit about your motivations behind this work?
When you move abroad, I think one of the most interesting first experiences is that something that has been completely absolute in your life, your native tongue, is actually, it becomes relative. It was my first deep experience of how it's possible to share your culture beyond your native tongue, and to explain yourself and your cultural background maybe in a third language. I had the impression that although in a sense or in some certain fields we understand each other very well with the people with whom I was hanging out, but I couldn't really share the very strong interest of mine in Hungarian poetry with them, because they don't understand. So I wanted to reverse this frustration in a way, and I asked them to read these poems without them knowing what that was about. And then during these sessions I actually I asked them to read these poems, but then we went through the poems, we talked about the poems, I translated the poems to them in a raw translation, and it really gave me a renewed interest in this kind of cultural communication. But it was also interesting to me in a sonic way. It's not even a question of accent because they don't know the language, so mm-hmm. they don't have an accent on it, mm-hmm. but it's really a perception of a list of letters on mm-hmm. a paper that they approach somehow, and that perception or that approach is what is sounding actually in these videos.
Mm-hmm. I thought that this work is interesting because it's also a kind of transformation of cultural heritage into more contemporary or personal questions or experiences. And you have another piece that I also found interesting in the sense how you approach this kind of inherited national identity or local or regional identity, in which you worked with the Hungarian national anthem. Could you tell what did you do with this piece?
So the Szózat was actually composed by Béni Egressy, mm-hmm. the music of mm-hmm. the Szózat. Mm-hmm. And it's a very 19th century romantic song, I would say. And I really like the original one. But I was living back then in Vienna, and I was trying to figure out my own relationship to homesickness and nationality and national identity as such. And this Szózat is basically about, it's an imperative of being faithful to your national origins and actually live and die in your own home country or mother country, as it says in Hungarian, and be buried in your home country, which is kind of binding, isn't it?
That was your motivation or the trigger studying in Vienna and kind of deconstructing a bit musical piece? And could you just describe briefly how the work is put together?
Yeah. As you mentioned, I wanted to deconstruct the Szózat. Mm-hmm. And by deconstructing, I meant that I cut up the score of the four-part choir piece, and I had a short collaboration with four singers of the Suharóza Experimental Choir in Budapest, and I asked them to sing the syllables separately from each other. We recorded the syllables separately from the Szózat, and I didn't give them the right pitch to sing. So my idea was to liberate these sounds from the tonal system. I didn't give the right pitch. And by liberating the sounds from this system, I wanted to liberate the meaning of the choir piece from the nationalistic connotations that it gained in the last decade. Mm-hmm. So basically this was my idea, and I made three versions with the members of the Suharóza choir. It was the four-part choir piece deconstructed, and I also recorded one with Stefanie Falkais. She was a classmate of mine in the Transmediale class at the University of Applied Arts in Vienna, and with her it was of course just the one-part thing, which became a more atonal version. And then I made a performative event out of it, where I just gave the scores and the syllables to people, and we were circling around each other and reacting to the pitches that the other people were singing. So we sang out the syllables, we went through the scores mm-hmm. in our own speed and tempo, mm-hmm. and it became a much more...
I can imagine that you could feel that it's more your own piece or your own...
Yeah, I think the third record was the craziest in terms of liberation, and that there were really just like people singing out syllables the way mm-hmm. they wanted, mm-hmm. but but they were also reacting to each other, and mm-hmm. this is what I really liked about mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a kind of imperative patriotism that you fulfill because you fear the accusation that you are not patriot enough, but more like a kind of self-organized understanding of even a national community that I could also sense. But of course, these are abstract ideas, and at the same time, this piece is also something that I think for each Hungarian is can give a very special kind of sensory experience, because it's something very well known, very very deep in your memories and in your soundscapes, and it's deconstructed, and it can have a very kind of even bodily effect. So it's interesting that you mentioned this liberation again, which was also part of the Missa Ecologica piece. And I was wondering, as you already mentioned, how kind of national and cultural heritage is a heavy task to reinterpret for yourself. If you feel that your ecofeminist practice has any kind of specific kind of potential or approach or challenges being based in Hungary, if you think that it matters at all.
I start with a distant idea
mm-hmm.
that with Rita Süveges we co-edited a series of articles called Climate Imaginary Reader, which was first published at a Transit blog in Hungarian, and then it was published in English at the Mesosfera magazine. And we invited Kata Dóra Kis to analyze the Hungarian family and biopolitics from an ecofeminist perspective. And this is, I think, what we can actually do to, like, acknowledge that we are facing a global challenge, but we have to look at things locally. So what we can offer to ecofeminist thinking mm-hmm. is exactly to do the work at home, to think about local issues. This is what our aim was with the Agency for Climate Imaginary as well, to showcase works rooted in ecological and climate issues, but which are relevant here. And I don't think it's a different or a new or a revolutionary idea, but with all these climate issues, we have to believe that it's happening globally, but we have to start making people by pointing at the real issues in their backyard. So the problem in Tihany might resemble any other ecological destruction going on globally, but it's also very idiosyncratic of the neoliberal socio-economic setting fused with authoritarian cronyism mm-hmm. in Central Eastern Europe. So this is how it can happen, that the protected hill disappears, that monumental and monstrous villas arise, and that locals, mostly women, can only participate in this game as house cleaners or housekeepers in these huge buildings, which are only investments, and owners show up every second year for a weekend, and that these new hotels are built by people who are close to the power, and they also rather employ their own people rather than locals, while at the same time they become competition for the locals, but they have, of course, infinite resources. And they destroy the local people's cultural heritage and livelihood, and basically their past and the future of their children. So this is basically a present tense land occupation that we are witnessing, where the natural environment and local people are not respected at all. So I think the whole context of what's going on in Tihan specifically is very idiosyncratic of what's going on in Hungary mm-hmm. and maybe also regionally, but mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the deficiencies of democracy and social justice are quite obviously playing their role. But I think it's interesting that your work doesn't have any dry or theoretical or even kind of typical political tone. I find it an important new direction to address these problems, in addition to publications that you already mentioned, that the works themselves are not so kind of directly analyzing the situation, but showing a kind of alternative visionary approach. So how do you kind of balance between these poles?
I think I had a vision and I had a utopianistic idea of how it should be, and I wanted to portray it in an authentic way. But as I mentioned before, my first idea was also to deal with this topic with a documentarist mm-hmm. approach, and it just made me really sad mm-hmm. to get deeper and deeper mm-hmm. in the context of Tihan. Mm-hmm. So at a point I was just so depressed that I felt that I should just give up on this topic. And mm-hmm. then I gave some time for myself to reflect on this whole topic, and I realized that the only thing I want to do with this is poetry. I want to go back to poetry, and I would like to have a poetic take on this. And with poetry, you have such a level of abstraction that you can get beyond all these political observations and ideas, and I really wanted to have an alternative vision besides the critique that we are already like practicing quite mm-hmm. committedly with the Extra Realm group. So I think it's, on the one hand, it was this kind of burnout at a point, mm. but also my very deep desire to get back to poetry and mm-hmm. to show something new with poetic means, or not new, but like an alternative, and something that actually the people who participate in enjoy. Mm-hmm.
This enjoyment relates to what I tried to describe at the beginning as my first impression of your work, performing an unusual beauty and joy that is not to be consumed, that is not to serve gratification. You do not humanize, domesticate the characters too much, but rather personalize them in a similar way as you did in your earlier works, exposing the disturbing and poetic strangeness of another language, culture, or the historical concept of patriotism. On the other hand, I consider it a refreshing new pathway of artistic engagement that instead of, or rather in addition to data, documents, dystopian forecasts, or scientific arguments, you perform both the fragility as well as the standalone beauty and the joyful community of natural beings. So thanks a lot for the conversation.
Thank you, Zsuzsa, for the nice words and for the conversation, and thank you for having me.